The Guardian.
World Cup. Every 4 years is the World Cup. If you don't pick up a grunge shirt in the build up, then we'll love it when you score a goal.
Ooh, did you see that?
World Cup. It might all end in tears or a headbutt. You can follow all the blogging on your laptop. From Slovenia to Slovakia, from Nigeria to the Cote d'Ivoire.
Cote d'Ivoire.
The Guardian and Observer, packed with World Cup coverage every day.
World Cup Daily with James Richardson on Guardian.co.uk.
Day 31 at the World Cup. And what began 1 month ago with R. Kelly and a dung beetle reached its logical conclusion Sunday night with the biggest football game in the world. Not counting all the ones on Sky, obviously. Spain 1, Holland 0. All right, they make more needless passes than John Terry on Mastermind, but we salute España, the new rulers of the football world. And with the tournament now at an end, we wave goodbye to a month of glorious football and England matches. And we select our most cherished moments, the things we'll be stowing in our big trunk of memories from South Africa 2010, from Maradona's meat on the grill to the French Revolution, from Suarez's cheeky hand of God to brave JT's man-to-man chat with his manager, not forgetting, of course, Robbie Earle's early exit for accidental ambush marketing. All of that being looked back on and more as we say Baya Donkey and Gia Bonga, South Africa, from World Cup Daily. Hello, world, and hankies at the ready as we begin the final edition of this World Cup Daily. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Amy Lawrence.
Hello.
Paul McInnes.
Hi, boo.
Indeed. Team, looks like we made it. how do you feel?
Very bored.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, I have to warn you, because people are going to be hearing this after. They're not going to have that immediate sense of, that perhaps elements of that World Cup final left us with.
I suspect I will have that feeling of, for several weeks, if not months to come.
Right.
It was a very dull final, quite disappointing. But the best team in the world are the world champions, and that's probably the way it should be.
No, I've seen duller games than that in this very tournament. I mean, the second half was actually, I thought, quite funny, but it was so one note in its kind of drama that by the time it got to the extra time, I just had enough.
I'm just not sure what people expect of finals, because I find it a bit depressing the way everybody builds it up so much and then proceeds to smash down every preconception and say how boring or rubbish or awful and an insult to football it is. And I mean, you know, we're talking about the biggest game of football and the biggest occasion that any of these players probably will be involved in their lives.
Mm.
And there's so much at stake now that I just think people should relax a little bit and allow a final to just exist in its own way and not have too much hype about it. Because if you think Spain and Holland or whoever are just going to go out there and play beautiful football for 90 minutes, well, that's a lovely idea, but it's not going to happen anymore.
I appreciate that, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it was a boring game. If the proverbial spaceship had come down and the aliens had gone, oh, these are the two best teams in the world, or quite the worst two teams in the world.
Come on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fair to say that both teams have played better in this tournament. But I can also understand what you're saying, Amy. Nerves and a tactical setup, which means that you're not going to take too many risks, lest that somebody hit you on the counter-attack, with most of the top teams being very highly proficient at the counter-attack. I think you kind of look at this final and you think, well, I know what's going to come in 4 years' time and I know what's going to come another 4 years after that.
I just think if you look back at, you know, the final of 1970 and all that glorious stuff that we all love to imagine it's going to be every time. Well, that was great in 1970, but we're now in 2010
and
football isn't played in the same kind of planet.
It's sad, though, isn't it?
It is a bit sad, but we've just got to, I think rather than getting too wound up about it, I think it's nice to just feel happy for Spain. And they deserved it. Iniesta was absolutely sensational and, you know, scored a smashing goal.
Yeah.
I'm happy with that.
I agree with you when you say happy for Spain, because turgid though much of the game was, when the final whistle blows and Spain celebrate, etc., there is that joy and we can all share in that marvellous feeling, the scenes from Madrid, etc., all that joy. The one thing I would say is that just the build-up to this game with the kind of tiki-taka Taliban telling everyone who didn't say, oh, Spain, that's so great the way you completely dominate games but yet only score one goal from a header. You obviously don't understand football if you don't appreciate that. But it just felt a little bit like, oh, my God,
Well, if you played football, James.
I know, and it's true.
Do you even like football?
They haven't played tiki-taka very well throughout the knockout stages in particular. I mean, against Paraguay and tonight, the game never really got going. I think it was interesting, all this row that was going on about Spain after the semi-final, when actually they did play their game to pretty much the maximum. And eventually they carved out the opportunity. And I enjoyed watching that game, but I didn't enjoy this one. And that's partly down to the Dutch, who were determined to disrupt.
And though they might complain at Howard, who I'm sure we're going to be talking about a little bit more with Sid in a second, they only had themselves to blame. Here was an interesting stat. After 90 minutes, the Holland player with the most completed passes with the goalkeeper. A couple of posts. Roy A1, the Dutch, had their own ingenious solution to the problem of the Jabulani. Ignore it and kick the opposition. Eddie Munro, Holland suck, unlike Bobby Eden. She was the actress who'd promised everyone who followed her on Twitter oral sex if Holland won. Turns out Sergio Ramos wasn't the only person to miss out on some free headers. That's the one I made.
Is that why John Ashton signed up to Twitter?
Probably. Very, very... No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. I can confirm it wasn't. And also, when we're saying about, you know, Holland only have themselves to blame, Owen Robben...
I thought Casillas played really well tonight.
That was Casillas rather than Robben, was it?
I mean, Robben should have got a little bit more lift on the ball, but Casillas was out to him so quickly and covered both sides of the goal. I thought he did very well. And all his handling was superb tonight, where it's been quite shaky up to now.
Mm.
And Stekelenburg, I thought, who had looked dicey in some other games, had a good game tonight as well. So the keeper, it hasn't been a great tournament for goalkeepers on the whole, and yet the two, I think, in the final did redeem the custodian's art a little bit.
Mm. Before we hear from Sid, what about Howard Webb? Was it 14 cards he handed out?
Yeah, I thought Howard Webb did quite well, to be honest. It was a very difficult game to referee. The Dutch players in particular, but all of the players from both teams, behaved disgracefully throughout the game, just whinging, moaning, trying to get each other booked, complaining about every single decision that was made. And in that situation, it's, you know, who'd be a referee? He did make a mistake in the build-up to the goal. It wasn't a huge error, and it's not directly his fault that Spain scored.
I thought Webb had a mixed game. He missed a foul and a Spain penalty shout with Mark van Bommel on Alonso. He missed a clear corner twice. He missed a quite clear foul on Iniesta, and all that stuff at the end of the game as well. I mean, he was obviously having to make a lot of calls, but he did make a few mistakes.
Yeah,
I mean, I think he broke the record for the number of cards dished out in a final, but I can't think of a single one of them that wasn't fully deserved. And the Dutch, while they're going to complain about him, could easily have been down to 9, if not 8, players at one stage.
De Jong's kung fu kick on Xavi Alonso.
How was that not a straight red? Yeah. Van Bommel should have been sent off. He could have got...
Before kickoff, I think.
Probably, he should have got 4 or 5 yellow cards. Yeah. And Schneider, there was a case that he...
Different kind of English referee this time. Yeah. Somebody might have done that. We all know who.
Yeah, dear. Well, should we dial up Sid then? Assuming he's not out in his shorts and T-shirt in a fountain somewhere, a hollering with his Spanish chums.
World Cup Daily from The Guardian with James Richardson.
Hello.
Hey, is that Sid Lowe?
Hello, yes it is.
Hi, Sid. Why aren't you out with your head in a fountain somewhere?
Well, because I've got to take a call from Near Earth Orbit.
Hey, that's friend. That you are. Tell you what. Thank you very much, Sid. Listen,
My neighbourhood's gone bonkers, as you can probably imagine.
Tell us all about it, Sid.
Well, the fireworks were going off before the final whistle, which I thought was asking for trouble, to be honest. I mean, obviously, there were still only a couple of minutes to go after Iniesta scored, but they started going off straight away, and now the tooting and the beeping and the et cetera, is going off there. And it's been quite entertaining watching the post-match stuff as well,
Sid,
on Spanish TV.
Take the phone to the window. Can we hear some of this crazy tooting and beeping?
Let me see. Hang on. The only thing is the battery's about to die, so it's actually plugged into the wall at the moment to try and make sure it doesn't happen.
Never mind. There'll be another World Cup in 4 years. We'll just try and clear somebody up.
Exactly, yeah. Let's not worry about it. It'll be fine. Oh, hang on. Oh, I'm having real battery problems here. Wait a minute.
We could just edit in some of the noise after Euro 2008.
Okay. Yeah. Wow, that really brings it home.
Doesn't it?
Listen, I'm betting Valdano doesn't call that one shit on a stick. What do you think?
well, in terms of the game, he might well do, but who cares in terms of the way it turned out? And one of the things that's been, it's been great because watching the post-match stuff, one of the things that's been entertaining about it is that the footballers have been extraordinarily ineloquent, even by their own standards, because they're all just breaking down in tears. Now, if you remember at the very start of the tournament, there was a bit of a hoo-ha about the post-match interview between Iker Casillas and Sara Carbonara. Now, of course, Sara Carbonara being his girlfriend, and there were suggestions that she was part of the problem, she was taking his eye off the ball. Well, the interview with them tonight was he came into the flash zone area, and she said, so who you know, what do you think of in a moment like this? And he just started crying, gave her a kiss and ran away again, which I thought was a nice touch. And Andres Iniesta, again, broke down into tears on the touchline, not least because, of course, for him, it was he was asked the same question. He said Dani Jarque, whose name was the one that he had on the T-shirt. Yeah. Of course, Dani Jarque, the Espanyol player who died of a heart attack a year or so ago. Andres Iniesta was very, very good friends with him. So the reaction to it has been, I suppose this is inevitable, really, but it's been more emotional than anything else.
Sid, I'm just wondering, you're talking about the emotions there. In what way does this compare to 2 years ago, when obviously it must have been a big thing for Spain to get that monkey off the back and win? How is it different this time around, with being actually the World Cup and also the achievement of doing both, which is so phenomenal?
I think last time was really really a kind of, as you say, it was almost a watershed thing. I think this feels bigger. This feels like the confirmation that wasn't a fluke, that wasn't a one-off, that this is genuinely a special generation. Just the fact that it's World Cup and certainly the way this has been built, I think because there was expectation at the start of this tournament when maybe last time there wasn't. Perhaps this time there was pressure on them when maybe last time there wasn't. I think this feels much, much bigger, and not just for the obvious reason, which is that it's a World Cup, not a European Championships.
I mean, how long can this be sustained for? Is the feeling that, you know, Spain are ready to dominate for years to come?
Right. Well, I think the most important way of approaching this is to say, you can probably hear some cars going by now beeping, is to say that after the European Championships, and this is certainly something that Fernando Torres was very keen on stressing, when they won the European Championships and they felt they got the monkey off their back and so on, there was a feeling then that wasn't just about ending history, but about building a new future. That was very definitely, yes, we can go on and do something great. They've now done it. I think that this, when they analyse this and when they talk about it in the next few days, there will definitely be a sense of Spain going on and doing more, Spain certainly being favourites at the next European Championships. And I must admit, when the full-time whistle went, I couldn't help thinking, my goodness, this lot, because they put an advert up for the live coverage of the European Championships qualifiers. I thought they really could go and win that as well. And that certainly will be picked up on. But right now, it's just the excitement, the emotion of having just won the World Cup, which I can't begin to stress just how absolutely bloody massive this is. I think there's one or two reasons why maybe this generation won't go on and do quite that much. And that is, I think everybody recognises that, obviously, Carlos Puyol is very important. But above all else, I think everybody recognises that the guy at the heart of this team is Xavi Hernandez. He said in an interview the other day that he doesn't think he's got another World Cup in him because he'll be 34 by the next World Cup. He probably does have a European Championships left in him, though. So I would expect him to be very, very strong at the European Championships. But then, of course, I suppose all Arsenal fans would say in response to that, well, it doesn't matter, because by the time Xavi Hernandez is too old, Cesc Fabregas will be in the Spain squad still and will be playing a starring role. And certainly, I think the approach to the game, the depth of talent, the way that Spanish clubs and in particular the Spanish Federation handle youth football suggests that, yeah, this could well go on for quite a while. Obviously not necessarily, I'm not by any means saying they'll win every World Cup and they'll win every European Championships, but I think they will now be a genuinely strong side for quite a while to come.
Sorry, what did you just say, Sid?
Sid, as an English...
I think I said yes. My answer was yes.
As an Englishman living in Spain and who's lived there for some time, how do you personally feel about this triumph, particularly in light of all the juicy journalistic work it's likely to bring in for you?
I honestly don't know how I feel about it. I'm very, very pleased for a lot of Spanish friends, and very pleased for some of the players as well, who there are two or three people in the Spanish squad who are genuinely good people,
who,
and very pleased for
who
them.
Who said who? Who are your
pals?
Well,
Fernando Torres is a genuinely nice person. Xavi Alonso is a genuinely nice person. That's true as well of David Villa, even though he's not the most eloquent of characters.
Who's not nice?
In the current Spain squad, that's a very good question. I mean, I don't know all of them by any means, and I don't know any of them particularly well.
Just guess. Traduced their characters.
I tell you what, Iniesta seems like a wrong one to me.
I'll guess for you. Well, that's another person, by the way, Andres Iniesta. I mean, talk about a guy who deserves to win the World Cup, not just for the talent, but because he is, you know, he's a bit of a geek, basically, but he's a proper nice guy.
Sid, what were they saying about Howard Webb on Spanish commentary?
Well, I don't know. Maybe this phrase will just about clarify things for you. This man should never referee a match ever again, was one of the things that was said about him in the first half. In the first half, they thought he was an absolute disgrace. They felt that, as you can probably imagine what they felt that cards should have come out much earlier for a number of players, De Jong in particular, but also, of course, Mark Van Bommel. But then that's true, that card should have come out earlier for him, like in the first game or the second game or the third game and so on. They then rather conveniently overlooked a couple of decisions that went their way in the second half. But then, to be honest with you, that is the nature of Spanish television coverage of football, and certainly on Telecinco, the channel that's got the World Cup rights. There's no pretense at anything other than bias. There's no pretense at anything other than supporting a team. But they weren't impressed with him. They were furious with him pretty much from start to finish.
Right, Sid. Just you mentioning Torres before I forget. Did he really do his hamstring at the end, or was he just wasting time?
I don't think for a minute that Fernando Torres is wasting time, because you can see how desperately upset he was to pull up injured. I suspect he was probably thinking there was a chance of a goal there and a chance to kind of almost redeem the entire tournament, because he will, deep down, of course, come out of this tournament thinking, I haven't really played a role. But I want to insist on the stat that I think I might even have pointed out yesterday. David Villa now, three games at this World Cup where he hasn't scored. All three have been the ones that Fernando Torres didn't start.
Interesting. Is his hamstring gone? Is that the...
Well, it certainly looks that way. I mean, yeah. We haven't had any confirmation of that just yet.
Wow, and Liverpool's... are they not already training for their Europa League matches? They are, aren't they?
Mark Lawrenson on the commentary sounded absolutely devastated when Torres went down. You could tell it was nothing whatsoever to do with Spain.
Well, no, he was devastated because the only player he knew anything about had just got injured.
Ooh. Listen, well, that's fantastic. Before you salute us... can you hold your phone out the window one more time, just for another blast of that?
Let me see if I can get it by the window. Yeah, let me see if I can get it outside. Hang on.
See, I'm slightly concerned that all that beeping might be because Estella's escaped and is wandering around on the motorway.
I don't know if you can actually hear anything. You probably can't.
No.
That's a bit rubbish, that is, isn't it? They're supposed to do fireworks and beeping on cue, and then as soon as you want to hold it out the window... they're not doing it.
No. You're not really in Spain, are you, Sid?
This is all a massive bluff. You've caught me on my holidays in Wales or something.
Been impersonating Nelson
Mandela.
Any minute
now you'll hear an entire choir from the valley start singing, and then my game will really be up.
All right, well, let's cut this off as soon as possible. Sid, thank you very, very much. Of course, we have a gaping chasm of Sidlessness before we hear from you again, which will be in, what, all of 3 or 4 weeks' time when the season starts again. That's amazing.
God, that soon.
Magnificent. Sid, muchas gracias. And
it's a pleasure.
Yeah.
Always.
Excellent. Thanks, Sid. Before we leave the final, we should actually just get a quick reaction from our kind of chief Dutch correspondent, ESPN.com's Leander Scherlakens, who's actually, I think, in the mix zone. So I think this is only going to be the briefest of comments. Leander! I think you're there. Leander, the reaction then to this final?
Well, personally, I just sort of find disappointment not so much in that the game was lost, but how it was lost. I mean, the style of the whole thing and the way it went down, I thought was unworthy of the Dutch tradition of football. I mean, it was such a passive and such a negative approach that these finalists, I really didn't think were worthy of succeeding the finalists from 74 and 78. I mean, there are ways to lose with honor, and this was not it. So, to me personally, this was very disappointing for that reason more than any other. I mean, you know, going into that game, you're the underdog, but, you know, at least try to play football.
So you think the reaction back in Holland is going to be one more of disappointment with the players than with anything else?
Well, I'm getting the sense that there's still going to be some sort of reception for the players. Like me, most Dutch people didn't expect that they'd get quite as far as they did. So in that sense, this is a win. But, I mean, that was really a shameful performance.
Yeah, it's a shame. And have you got any reaction there in the mix zone from any of the Dutch players?
The players are not happy with Howard Webb, I can tell you that. I was just speaking to Robin van Persie, and he said this it was just ridiculous. And he said it was... Van Persie really thought he was in favor of... he was favoring Spain. which, you know, I mean, it might be a bit of a bold claim, but certainly there were things that you can ask questions about.
All right. Well, listen, Leander, our commiserations and best of luck getting some kind of quotes out of the Dutch players this evening. And many, many thanks in the meantime for all your contributions in this World Cup.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been a pleasure.
We mentioned Diego Forlán getting the Golden Ball for the World Cup.
And the Golden Boot,
Thomas Müller, yeah.
Because he got the most assists.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is kind of a strange way of doing it, but it's nice that it went to Thomas Müller.
Yeah. I think it should have all gone to Diego Forlán. He's definitely my player of the tournament.
Right.
In an old-school World Cup way as well.
Yeah.
He took a minor country, led it single-handedly, nearly to the final.
Yeah.
That's what you want.
Well, I'm convinced. How do they... Who picks the Golden Ball?
I think there's a FIFA technical committee that come up with a shortlist that do all sorts of analyses during the tournament.
All right.
Who they think's doing well and what the trends are. And there's people like Andy Roxburgh, Gerard Houllier and so on, Christian Kerembo and things in that committee. And then if memory serves, they generally throw it out to the journalists.
All right.
Whatever
okay.
gave them that idea to have a vote just after the final. There was a bit of a hoo-ha last time because lots of people voted for Zidane. But, of course, when the final came along, people were all concerned about what on earth to do at the end of that game, because if they wanted to vote for Zidane, should they or shouldn't they or could they or couldn't they? And I think Cannavaro got it in the end.
All right. Posts? Can't read out any of the ones I wanted to read out because producer Ben won't let me. Podcasting Couch. Yours. You know the one about the painted toenails? Legal reasons, yeah. On other topics, Slim Pickens. Ah, it was him who compared watching Spain to Sting making love to Trudy Styler. Yeah, yeah, good shout. And he says, that was me. And anyway, what are the podcaster's standout impressions of the World Cup? There you go. That was the question I put to Sib with such barren results a short time ago. I wonder if we have any fresher memories of this extraordinary month, Barry.
I have memories.
All right, then. Shall I give you...
The Dutch team. Not the Dutch team. That's quite a fresh memory. All right.
Yep.
No, the Dutch attractive blonde ladies in short skirts being ejected from one of the stadiums.
That's one of your key World Cup memories, is it, Barry?
Yeah.
It was an amazing story. I mean, that had everything. It had 30 attractive ladies in kind of synchronized knitwear, and then it had an ITV pundit involved in this kind of mysterious ticketing thing that had secured them their positions, and then it had FIFA, hoisted by their own petard because they tried to silence the I can't even remember the name of the beer now. Which the Bavaria ladies, and then ended up with Bavaria all over the place.
Someone wrote into the Fiverr at the time saying that if, like, say, 10 or 15 years ago, Robbie Earle had been told that he would lose his job as an ITV pundit in a scandal involving 30 very attractive blonde Dutch women wearing skimpy dresses, he'd probably have bitten whoever it was his hand off. But what a dull way to go out for such a vista to pass.
That whole scandal just blew the World Cup right open. People have been talking about nothing else ever since, Amy, so, you know.
Well, I enjoyed it.
Cool. Shame, okay. Suck it up.
How about, I mean, the other big, I mean, on field, there were all sorts of talking points. There was your Suarez handball, but I think we kind of done all of those to death. But it's funny how long ago a lot of this seems now, like Rooney getting sweary when he left the pitch that term after the Algeria match. And
Capello showing John Terry the pimp hand.
Yeah, that's right.
And my favourite sort of England bit is the bird who perched on the Algerian net. It was just such a lovely metaphor for the absolute futility of England's efforts in South Africa.
Mm.
There was a good bit what Lee Dixon spotted, or presumably a producer told him to spot something, but he mentioned and I never saw in the game, which was just before the Dutch equalised from that free kick, which they rolled back and then Snyder crossed in and Mello tapped into his own goal. Two Brazilians, Kaká and somebody else, were running back to the box, obviously quite pleased with what they'd just done, high-fiving each other on the edge of the box and not paying any attention as the free kick's being taken, the ball's being buzzed over their heads, and then their entire World Cup bid collapses and they go out of the tournament.
Wow, Brazil going out, that was a big story, wasn't it? There's a great shot of Ozil doing keepy-uppies with his own chewing gum. Did you see this? Basically, he's chewing gum not quite on the same level as yours, but he's chewing gum and then he spits it out onto his foot, hoofs it back up in the air, straight into his mouth again. Nice. Magnificently done.
Did you get that in super slow-mo?
Yeah, you do. It's on YouTube. YouTube chewing gum.
So I think super slow-mo has been a really good thing about this World Cup.
Producer Ben says it was a bit of Ozil gummage. I have to say, that's quality work, Producer Ben. Yeah. Maicon's goal, Maradona's mixed metaphors, meat on the grill, journalists drop your trousers, all that kind of stuff. That was all good.
Pretty much all of Maradona was a highlight. He was completely fantastic. And on the other side of the flip side, that really you'd say France were a great story.
That was fantastic. It
was absolutely exceptional, particularly that Sunday when it all went poire-shaped and they had the whole bus situation and going on strike. And it was absolutely spectacularly engrossing in a way that if you followed French football for a while, you couldn't believe that it could come to that, and then it did.
For you, it must have been so satisfying after seeing for years Dominic getting away with it, and then he finally got found out in the worst way possible.
Well, what I found really the most annoying thing of all was that, I mean, I've been a sort of unashamed Dominic basher for years, and in the end, I almost had to feel sorry for him, and I was cross with myself for
even
having
when
to feel
he
like
shake
that,
Pereira's
which made
hand?
Me feel even more annoyance about Dominic. Well, that was just so typical Dominic. That was not even out of character.
When he didn't
exactly
shake Pereira's
what you'd
hand.
Expect of him. And, you know, French football will be only the better for his disappearing probably back to the Federation to some desk job.
It sets a bad precedent, though, doesn't it, when the players can undermine a coach to that extent and get away with it?
That's fair comment. And, I mean, there's been very interesting debate back in France with a lot of fairly major ex-players and iconic people in French football coming out saying that quite a lot of their current squad shouldn't be playing again, which is a big deal for Laurent Blanc to try and deal with in the future.
Mm.
And another highlight, because I just have to mention this, is Keisuke Honda.
Oh, yeah.
Just...
You like
that I do like him. I had a bit of a really pathetic crush on him. I'm much too old.
Do you
old
think
for that
he's
now,
a summer fling, or do you think he's the sort of person who would reward a long term, season long relationship?
I'd be prepared to give it a try.
Really?
I thought that Cruyff turn in the game against Denmark, where he set up the third goal for Japan, was really a lovely moment in the tournament. And just little individual moments from either players or teams. I thought the North Korea goal against Brazil, even though it didn't really mean anything in the end, was just one of those lovely things to see in a World Cup.
Quagliarella's second for Italy against Slovakia, that little chip drive from the edge of the box.
Oh, we're on to goals of the tournament now.
Oh, wait, we're having
goals of the tournament. Go on then.
I would say Quagliarella's second.
Right.
His first, but Italy's second against Slovakia.
Yeah,
Quagliarella.
Absolutely. But that would be on my list. I put David Villa's brilliant burst into the box past two defenders, slaloming round another one who knocks him over, but as he falls to the ground, managing to lift the ball into the far corner against Honduras. That would be my number one.
I very much liked Asamoah Gyan's goal for Ghana against the United States, the winner he scored, because it was a real net buster and seemed particularly poignant because their strip that they were wearing was identical to the Melchester Rovers strip. So Roy the Rovers' goal in a Roy the Rovers strip, and Tevez's goal against Mexico was also a personal favourite.
And I quite like the very first goal, the South Africa goal as well.
The Shabalala.
Yeah, which was another
mention Van Bronckhorst at that point.
Let's mention Van Bronckhorst.
Mm.
Yeah.
And he got taken off in his last game. A bit sad. His legs went, old man.
Barry.
Yes.
The tactical legacy of South Africa 2010.
Yes. Well, 4-4-2-3-1 is God now.
Yeah.
The tactical legacy of World Cup, I think, is that everyone's now obsessed with the few people left in the world that weren't obsessed with formations and false number nines and inside-out wingers before the tournament now are. And the rest of us tickies at the back who find it all slightly dull to talk about, while appreciating the need for tactical innovation and whatnot. There's only about five of us left. It's like the siege in Zulu, and we're doomed.
And that's Jonathan Wilson up there, all banging his shield and his spear together.
Yeah, I blame Jonathan Wilson for this.
Now there's an image.
It is, isn't it? The Vuvuzela. I love the Vuvuzela.
And would you like to see the Vuvuzela introduced?
No, I wouldn't. But that's what I like about it. It was so other. It was the symbol of the other. And there was a top German I can't remember what his actual title was. It was a job title I'd never seen before. It was something to do with National Marketing Identity Development, or something like that. And he'd been a key player in Germany's brilliant handling of the 2006 World Cup. And he said he thought that the South Africans and their experience of the World Cup, had the overriding success of it had been the Vuvuzela, because it was a tool for all fans to be at the centre of the experience. And I was astonished by the way all foreign fans embraced it. It made the tournament truly fan-centric. You could just pitch up, buy one of these ridiculous plastic things, and then feel that you had, you were South Africa 2010.
It's also like Paul the Psychic Octopus as well. It's something right. distinct about the tournament that hasn't happened before that people will be able to remember, peg their memories on.
It's a measure of how utterly tedious much of the football was that many people's abiding memory of the tournament will be a psychic octopus and a plastic trumpet.
Does anybody know the average lifespan of an octopus?
3 years.
Oh, so...
He can do the Euros.
He's... No, he can't.
I think he did the last Euros. So.
He'd be lucky to make Christmas.
Yeah. Well, there you go. One question that probably even Paul the Psychic Octopus couldn't answer was, what is exactly Mahindra Satyam? That name that you saw all over, all around the pitches. Paul, you have your hand
yeah,
up.
Yeah, Paul the non-psychic ginger. I googled them. They're India's number one IT supplier.
Ah.
And they are the official IT supplier to the World Cup.
That's interesting. They're not West London's number one IT supplier. On the Move Computing is.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Do you have a phone number?
I don't actually know.
How is Mrs.
I believe it's all fine. I must admit, we haven't been in contact much.
Do you not ring your mother?
I haven't. I've been busy with the cycling.
On the subject of psychic octopuses, actually.
Right.
The other day...
It's probably your last opportunity to get this in that case.
The other day in the office...
Yeah.
Paul Doyle... While in conversation with Paul Doyle and Borna Ray.
The ink business, isn't
it cropped up that Paul Doyle, despite being almost in his late 30s, was unaware that octopodes squirt ink. And then he took grave exception to the fact that Barney and I were making fun of him for the fact that he did not know this.
That's not like Paul.
We couldn't believe that anyone could get that far in life without being aware of such a fact.
That far in life. The Guardian football desk.
Fair point.
Dear. Those are our World Cup memories. I'm sure there are loads more that we're going to remember as soon as producer Ben presses the big red button off.
Have another go around of World Cup memories? Are you saying you haven't got enough?
Well, do you want any others?
Well, I've got more notes, but every time I said something, it was kind of eyes glazed over, looked at Barry, so I could presume they were tedious.
No, go ahead, Paul.
No, I don't want to start now. Like, you know, right. Paul's special time.
I know you did have a special request for producer Ben for the end of this podcast.
Yeah, I'd just like to hear one of my abiding highlights, musical, non-Vuvuzela, was the Uruguayan national anthem.
All right, nice.
Which is a cross between like an opera and like a war battle theme. I loved it.
It's funny because on the other day on World Cup Daily, we were talking about our favourite anthems, and I said that was my favourite.
Wow, I never listened to that show, and yet I still had the same opinion.
Great. I think we all love, basically, deep down, the Uruguayan national anthem, especially in Ghana, right, Ghanese listeners? Oh, I think, isn't that there in the background? There it is. Well, while the merry strains of said national anthem burble away, let me just say many, many thanks, first of all, to all the correspondents and fans network members who helped us out in our search for a global perspective on this World Cup. Truly, thanks a lot for all of that. And the many people who gave up their time whilst in South Africa and it being late at night, etc., to fill us in on the latest developments. All the people who gave up their time at this end as well. People like Barry Glendinning and Paul McInnes and Amy Lawrence, but also the others. Tom Lards, Jacob Steinberg, Bernie Roney, Scott Murray, John Ashdown, Greg Ruffley, Paolo Bandini, Paul Doyle, and many, many more. And, of course, above all, you, the listener, you plucky thing. Well done to you. Happy now. And that wraps it up for World Cup Daily for another 4 years. Many thanks to producer Ben. Around August the 12th, we think, with our preview to the Premier League and the domestic season. So do join us for that. In the meantime, have a super luxury month off. And we'll speak to you soon.
For more more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.